this week's Adam Schefter podcast, we're going to be joined by two guests and take your voicemails. First, we'll talk to the Patriots free agent-to-be running back, Dion Lewis, about what his expectations are these next couple of weeks when he will hit the market and have the chance to sign with another team. And we'll be joined by the executive director of the Reese's Senior Bowl, the former Browns general manager, Phil Savage, who knows these college prospects as well as anyone as they descend upon Indianapolis for this week's scouting combine in preparation for the 2018 NFL draft. We'll get to your calls as well, the voicemails, but first, Patriots free agent to be running back, Dion Lewis. Hello, Dion.
Hey, how you doing?
What's it like right now to be Dion Lewis, a couple of weeks out of free agency, uncertainty abounding? What is it like?
I don't know. It's a weird time. You know, don't really know what's going to happen. But, you know, I've just been relaxing, resting my body for a few weeks, and I just started working out again. So just take care of my body and make sure I stay in shape.
When you say no idea what will happen, do you think your future could be anywhere in 2018?
Yeah. You know, I don't know where I can be. I don't know if I'm be here or somewhere else. So, you know, I'm just staying patient, not really thinking about it. You know, whatever happens, happens, and it'll all work out. So, man, I just try not to think about it and just try to enjoy it when it does come up.
How hard is it not to think about it when something so big is in front of you, Dion?
It's not too hard, you know, just because, you know, it's just the person I am. You know, I really don't let things bother me, and I kind of just keep to myself. So, you know, the last few weeks actually been going by pretty fast. So, you know, it'll be here before I know it. So, you know, I just try to stay busy and just hang out and just not worry about it.
Now, Dion, last year, this was very strange and interesting. If you go back to your NFL career from 2011 to 2016, you had 205 touches. Last year alone, in 1 year, 212. From 2011 to 2016, you had 688 rushing yards. Last year alone, 896. Six touchdowns during that first 5 years in the league, nine last year. So in 1 year this past year, a good time, by the way, right before free agency, your numbers exceeded all you had done from 11 through 16. What happened here?
You know, it's just different. You know, my dreams have been a little weird. You know, I got drafted to Philly for my first 2 years, and I barely even got in the game. You know, So then I got traded to Cleveland, and I got hurt. So, you know, my journey's been a little weird, so I never really got a chance to get on the field and play. So, and then when I came here to New England my first year, I got opportunity. I was going to ball a lot, and then I just went and hurt my knee. So, and then last year, I missed half of the year. So, this has really been the first year that I've actually got to play the whole season and was given opportunities most of the season. So, you know, I think that when I get opportunities, I'm able to show what type of player I am.
And you did. And what's also interesting to me, and I don't know that a lot of people realize this, is despite the fact that you're 5'8", 195 pounds, and by the way, we love 5'8" guys, Dion, very, very good.
Yeah.
You still averaged more yards per rush after contact this season than just about any back in the league. The only people close to you were LeGarrette Blount and Marshawn Lynch. You averaged 2.61 yards after contact, same as Blount. Derrick Henry was at 2.53. So even though you're not real big, you were still gaining more yards after contact than just about anybody in the league. How would you explain that?
Just trying to break tackles. You know, obviously I can make guys miss when I'm in space, but you know, just when I'm running inside, you know, just trying to, when guys get a hand on me, just only let them get a piece of me. So I think I do a good job of using my height to my advantage, and just using my explosiveness to break those tackles. And I pride myself on, you know, running the ball hard. You know, I've always been a tough runner, so I just pride myself on that. And you know, I just felt that you know, I had a lot to prove this year. You know, I was disappointed in my play last year, you know, coming off injury, and I have a high standard for myself. So coming in this year, I just want to show everybody what type of player I was.
We talked about the ACL tear in 2015. When teams talk to you in the coming weeks here, what will you tell them about where your health is at and how you feel at this stage of your career?
This is the best I've felt in a long time. You know, this year I practiced all the OTAs, every training camp practice. I only missed one practice this season, and that's the one day when I was sick this whole past season. So, you know, I think I put in the work. I learned how my body responds to certain things, and you know, my knees feel great. I feel great, and you know, I just got to keep taking care of my body. You know, I learned a lot throughout my career, and I've listened to my body more than I usually do. Sometimes I try to push through things, and because I like to work hard, but you know, I've learned I have to listen to my body.
Well, you're only 27, right? Which is for many running backs a time when they would be entering the prime of their career. And if we look at it again, 417 touches throughout the course of your career, which really is an average year for Le'Veon Bell, 417 touches. So you don't have much wear on the tire. What would you tell a team that is interested in signing you about how much you have left to give?
I think I have a lot to give. You know, I think my career is just getting started. You know, especially like these last 3 years. You know, my first 3 years in the league, I didn't really even play. So, you know, I didn't take many hits. So these past 3 years is the only opportunity I really got to get on the field. So my body feels great. My legs feel good. I don't feel 27. I feel 22, 23. So I just tell teams that I'm fresh. I don't take many big hits when I'm out there. So, you know, I think I got a lot to give, and I love this sport, and I'm going to play as long as I can. And I think I got a lot of years ahead of me.
Is there any chance you're going to be back in New England, Dion?
We'll see. You know, it's a business. You know, I love it here. You know, I've grown a great relationship in this area. Past 3 years has been great. I'm close to home. I'm in New York 2.5 hours, so I'm real close to my family. So all those things are perfect. But, you know, at the same time, it's a business. And hopefully it'll work out. But, you know, at the same time, you can't always think that way. You got to take care of yourself and your family at the same time. So, you know, it'll definitely be tough. But I think it'll work out. I hope it could work out. But at the same time, you know, I'm not putting all my eggs in one basket. You know, I know how the team like to handle their business. And, you know, as a running back, you got to make the most of your opportunity. And me being a player I am, my main thing is making sure I could go out there next year and show people what type of player I could be. I still think I could improve from what I did this past year. So my main thing is just, you know, making sure that I'm valued. That's my biggest thing, make sure that I'm valued the way I value myself, and that would be the biggest thing for me.
You mentioned learning to take care of yourself. How much have you learned from Tom Brady about taking care of yourself over time?
I learned a lot, man. You see Tom in here all the time. He's always out there working hard, and he takes care of his body all the time. He's always getting rubbed down before practice, after practice, you know, eating healthy, eating the right way. So, you know, just kind of learning from him, watching him, trying to pick up things from him and other people on the team as well. You know, there's a lot of guys in the league that, you know, do a great job of taking care of their bodies, and being around those guys all the time, you kind of pick up things from them and trying to learn and trying to incorporate it in your routine.
Who's somebody that you've learned something from that people wouldn't necessarily realize?
I think I learned a lot. I learned a lot my first 2 years from LeSean McCoy and Ronnie Brown.
Hmm.
Yeah, because those are the guys. I was behind those two my rookie year. And I was behind Shady my first and second year. So just when I first got in the league, I didn't really know what to expect. Just kind of learning from those guys. And Ronnie Brown was in the league for like 8 years at that time. So I was always asking him questions. What do you do with this? How do you do this? How you take your body and things like that. And, you know, just being on a lot of different teams, kind of like nitpicks from everybody, just always asking questions and trying to find the best solution for my body, because everybody's body is different and everybody responds differently. So I just always try to pick everybody's brain as much as possible.
I think people forget that you had the chance to play with so many good backs across the time when you've played with the teams that you have, from Philadelphia drafting you back in the fifth round of the 2011 draft, to going to Cleveland, to going to Indianapolis, to going to New England. You've played with some pretty good backs. Is there one back that has impressed you most that you've been a teammate of?
Yeah, definitely Shady. You know, I've been around a lot of great backs my whole time in the league, and Shady's one of the guys that, you know, when I seen him, and I like to compete, so I like to measure myself against anybody, but you know, he does some things that are pretty special, you know what I'm saying? And I learned a lot from him my first 2 years, so I definitely think he was one of the backs that when you see him in practice, you see him in the games in person, you see something special about him. You know, I played with a lot of other great backs, and that's why I'm so confident and I'm so hungry all the time, because I know that I can compete with anybody, you know, and just that's just the mentality I have, and just go out there and improve what I can do, especially, you know, being short your whole life. Everybody always tell you, so I've always kind of had that mindset, you know, to prove people wrong, and that's just how I keep motivating myself and to go out there and play with that edge on Sundays.
What is that like for you? I mean, again, I've had to answer questions about being 5'8", too, Dion. But what is that like for you as a football player? I don't have to rely on my physical traits to make a living. You do. How has that molded you into the player that you are today?
I think it molded me a lot, you know, just hearing it from ever since I was younger, that I was always, everybody's always telling me I was too small. So, you know, I kind of just never let it bother me. I use it as motivation. And thing about me, I'm 5'7", 195, but when I'm on that football field, I'm a lot bigger than that. And I think if you ask people that played against me, they'll say the same thing. I don't run like I'm 5'7", 195. And I pride myself on that, and I just go out there and try to prove it every time I get the ball, every snap I'm on the field. And being what I've been through, I don't take anything lightly. I know that, you know, this game is very physical, and I've been hurt to a major surgery, so I know that any play could be a last. So when I'm out there, I'm going as hard as I can, and if it happens to be my last play, I'm going to make sure it's a good one.
Deion, we brought up Tom Brady before. One last question for you. How much longer do you think that quarterback is going to play for? He's talked about going to 45. What do you think?
I think he could play as long as he wants to. I mean, there hasn't been any drop-off in this game in the 3 years I played with him. You can't tell he's 40. So, man, I think he can play as long as he wants to. He puts the time and the work in, and he's very committed to the game, and he's committed to excellence. So I think he can play as long as he wants to play, he can play.
Hey, Deion, we really appreciate you taking some time. Good luck in free agency. Hope it works out for you however you want it to.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Phil?
Adam, how are you, buddy?
There are few people who know more about these college prospects than Phil Savage. And so, Phil, I will ask you as we go into the combine, what are you expecting to see? Who's going to pop out over the course of this coming week at the combine? A couple of guys that are just going to explode because they have those kinds of athletic skills.
Well, there are a few guys from our game, and then obviously a lot of these juniors, this will be their first exposure to actually have some measurables done and those sorts of things. You know, I think you always look at, you know, maybe let's start on offense, Adam, in terms of, you know, wide receiver-wise. Mm-hmm. You know, we had a player here named Jamon Moore from Missouri. Now, he's probably a third- to fifth-round type of draft pick, mm-hmm. but I would suspect that, you know, he's going to measure and he's going to time extremely well. DJ Shark was one of our co-offensive players of the game on that Saturday, Reese's Senior Bowl Saturday. He had a terrific game. He's going to run extremely fast at the combine. A couple juniors to keep an eye on, Christian Kirk, the wide receiver from Texas A&M. You know, he's a dynamic talent. Was a slot receiver primarily, a punt returner at A&M. He's coming out as a junior, but, you know, I would expect him to do well. And then, you know, maybe a couple guys off the radar that people aren't, you know, as familiar with. We had a corner here from Georgia State named Chandon Sullivan, and he's a player that they swear at the school he's going to jump 40 inches and going to run sub 4.4. Well, if he does that, then, you know, he's going to be a guy that the team's going to be talking a lot about over the next few months. But, you know, the combine, just it's a piece of the puzzle. I would tell you this, Adam. For the seniors, it's usually a confirmation of what you've already seen in the fall. In other words, if you think a player is really fast, he's usually going to run pretty well. Yep. If you think a guy is deficient in speed, then typically they won't run that well at the combine. Now, when it ends up being opposite of what you think, that's where some of the confusion comes in. But you're looking really for verification, confirmation of what you've already evaluated. But then for the juniors, to me, the combine is an elevated platform because the teams, the clubs, are trying to evaluate these juniors in a much shorter period of time. You're talking about, you know, 3 months or so versus the senior group that they've been watching really for the last 10 or 11 months.
Now, you brought up Chandon Sullivan from Georgia State. How high could a guy like that go if he performs well in Indy?
Well, I would say just by the simple fact that he was here, you know, at our recent Senior Bowl, and then, you know, now he gets a chance. If he goes and tests well, I mean, you're talking about probably a third-day draft pick. And if he does well, maybe he moves himself into that, you know, third or fourth round range. So the combine is very important for players that come from those mid-major programs and lower. Yep. Because, you know, the major schools, I think that the clubs do probably a really good job of evaluating them. They have multiple scouts going into the Michigans and the Alabamas and the Florida States.
But typically, at some of the other schools, the mid-majors and lower, you might only have a scout or two go in during the fall. So that's why some of those players tend to emerge, you know, as this process unfolds and then once actually those players get into the league.
All right, Phil, at the Senior Bowl, you had amongst the quarterbacks Josh Allen and Baker Mayfield. Give me an idea of what you saw from these guys and the rest of the quarterbacks there.
Yeah, Adam, I would say for sure that Baker Mayfield and Josh Allen headlined our event in terms of those were, you know, name prospects that, you know, people that follow the draft were very familiar with. Obviously, Baker won the Heisman Trophy. He was the first Heisman Trophy winner as a senior that we've had in the game since 2006. So that was a big deal for us from a publicity standpoint. But those two stole the headlines or were the headliners during the week.
Yep.
But a couple of guys on game day stole the show, and that was Kyle Laletta,
yep,
from University
Richmond.
Of Richmond, ended up being our MVP. And then Mike White, the quarterback from Western Kentucky. Now, he originally started off at South Florida, transferred because they changed offenses on it. But those are two players that I think really helped themselves, not only over the course of the week, but certainly in the game. And they're not first-rounders, but they're quarterbacks that are going to start being considered probably in that second to fifth round area, depending on, you know, club need and where they forecast them. But I thought both of those guys showed that they were capable passers. They, you know, adjusted to a pro-style system, so to speak, and performed well. You know, Luke Falk was here from Washington State.
Right.
You know, unfortunately, he couldn't play in the game. He went back for the memorial service for his teammate, Tyler Hilinski, you know, who committed suicide the week before our event. So he was unable to be part of the game, but he was here during the week. And I think Luke Falk, he's not going to probably test well, Adam, but he is a passer of the football. And, of course, we know there's a huge difference between being a thrower and a passer. But to me, Luke Falk is one of those guys that's got a sense of timing, a sense of awareness. And he's not going to run fast. He's not going to have a huge arm. But all he does is complete passes, and that's really the name of the game at that position when you really get down to it.
Let's get back to the two headliners from the Reese's Senior Bowl, Baker Mayfield and Josh Allen. What did you observe from each one of those quarterbacks, Phil?
You know, with Baker, Adam, I liken him to a basketball point guard. When you try to pressure him, he'll get the ball out of his hand, and he's got quick eyes, quick feet. He's got a quicker release. And so then when you try to lay off and play coverage, you know, he'll drive the lane on you. He'll take off and run for 10 or 12 or 15 yards. So I think there are a lot of things to like about Baker. He's a playmaker. He's built his reputation on his competitive nature. I thought that showed here in the practice week. And then, of course, he did participate in the game. There's a lot of noise outside, you know, of our organization about him not playing the game. And, you know, that was never a question in our mind. And he ultimately fulfilled that obligation as being a part of the game. But, you know, I would say this to you, Adam. 15 years ago, Baker Mayfield would have been seriously looked at by probably a third of the team.
Right.
I would say now 2/3 of the league will seriously evaluate him and come to the conclusion of whether they feel like they can work with a 6-foot quarterback, come to the conclusion as to whether they feel like they can wrap an offense and incorporate some of the elements of what he did at Oklahoma and Texas Tech into a pro-style system. So, again, I think it just depends on the organization and the coaches themselves, the quarterback coach, the coordinator, in terms of are they going to go all in on Baker Mayfield, because that's really the kind of circumstance he's going to need. If he ends up going to a team, which would be unlikely if they take him high in the first round, it tries to just pour him into a typical traditional pro-style offense, then, you know, this won't end up going as well as it could if there's a team that really embraces what he brings to the table. Now, you mentioned Josh Allen. You know, for Josh Allen, you know, he sort of fits the prototype that I would say the vast majority of teams are looking for, because he's big, he's physical, he's got a huge arm. There is a question on accuracy, and there's no doubt about it. You can point to the completion percentage. For those that like him, you can make excuses and say, hey, there were drops in every game. You project that over the course of 10 or 12 games, and you're looking at, you know, 20 to 30 to 40 drops, perhaps, over the course of a season. That would have impacted his percentage. But there's no debating the fact that there are times that the ball clearly gets away from him. He'll throw a couple beautiful passes right on the money, and then one will go 6 feet behind and into the ground for some reason, or you know, launch way out of bounds. Is that something that can be cleaned up? Some evaluators will say that it can be improved upon. Others will say that accuracy is just an inherent trait that cannot be coached. And so,
what does Phil Savage say? Which camp is Phil Savage in?
I think that there is an inherent accuracy instinct. In other words, the first time a kid picks up a rock and throws it a stop sign,
Yeah. Okay,
he may hit the sign, but did he aim for the tee and stop and hit
right. The
tee?
Yeah.
And to me, that there is something that is instinctive or inherited, or there's just something that's sort of natural about that. But I will say this, Adam. I just actually finished watching all the practice tapes from our game week, and there are plays where Josh Allen avoids pressure and then throws a strike 30 yards downfield. And it doesn't take all 32 teams. It only takes one team to say, you know what, we can build upon that one throw right there, because there is a school of thought that if a guy flashes something,
that's
the coaching staff's job to make that more of a consistent part of their game. And that's why Josh Allen's going to go extremely high. If he doesn't go number one overall, I bet he's off the board within the first five or six picks of this draft.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you bring up, within the last week, Phil, I've had two separate teams unrelated to the Cleveland Browns tell me that there was a single play, and you may have seen this in watching the tapes from the Senior Bowl, there was a single play that Josh Allen made where he was rolling out and threw on the run. One team told me it was 40 yards. One team told me it was 60 yards, but they said he threw a strike downfield. And maybe you know the play that when John Dorsey, the Browns GM, sees that play, and he did see it, he's going to fall in love with that guy, and he's going to want to take him to number one. You know the play I'm talking about?
Well, I don't have that one in my mind. The one I have is where he avoided to the left. There was pressure that came from his left side, and it ultimately he sidestepped it, and then he threw a deep comeback out about 30 yards in the air, but it was just absolutely on a line. There's very few people on the planet that can make that throw. And, you know, I think the debate in Cleveland, and obviously I was the GM there, and I always felt like you needed the bigger body quarterback with the strong arm
that
could pierce the wind in that stadium. And, you know, the truth of it is, Adam, all the attention in Cleveland goes on the quarterback, and there are two prevailing things that have happened with that franchise over the years that no regime has been able to figure out and solve the riddle. And that's A, stopping the run on defense, and B, being able to build an offense where there was a threat of the run game to help these poor quarterbacks that have gone through there. I mean, you know, there's just sort of this savior aspect that this one player is going to come in and save the day. The truth of it is it's been a lack of being able to run the ball and a lack of being able to stop the run. And that was something that really plagued us. And the one year that we did have successful with the 10 wins, Jamal Lewis ran for, you know, 1,300 yards. So it absolutely, those are questions that come into it. But for John Dorsey, I agree with you and the two other people that you spoke to that it's going to be hard to bypass Josh Allen knowing the situation that they play in environmentally, Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, Baltimore, and then, of course, in their own home stadium. And the truth of it is I do think in free agency they will find a bridge quarterback at some regard, some level. Mm-hmm. And so there won't be the inherent pressure to put Josh Allen on the field right out of the gate. Now, we know it can be fast-tracked, and these teams say they want to redshirt a quarterback for a year, and we know it lasts 4 weeks. But that's a conversation for after the draft.
So I know we're 2 months out, Phil, but if you had to bet a dollar today, 2 months out, you think the Browns would go Josh Allen, or do you think that they go Sam Darnold or Josh Rosen or Baker Mayfield or Saquon Barkley at one?
I think it comes down to Josh Allen and or Sam Darnold. In reality, now there's some talk that they could go a different position at number one and then, you know, see which quarterback is left at four. But look, if you're the picking number one overall, that you get your choice of quarterbacks. And I will say this, though, Adam, while this is a very deep quarterback class, and we mentioned Laletta, and you mentioned Tanner Lee from Nebraska, and Luke Falk, and some of these other guys are going to go later in the draft, I think the overall top of the draft group, and I like them all, but I do think they're a touch overhyped and overrated. But inevitably, by the time we get to the end of April, I would think that we're going to have four quarterbacks go off the board in the top 10, top 11 picks.
Baker Mayfield's in that group?
I think so. And whether I think they're overhyped or it's inflated, it doesn't matter, because the truth of it is these are the quarterbacks and the prospects you have to choose from. And if you don't take one up there, then the likelihood of really finding one in the third or fourth round that you can develop, I mean, those picks are few and far between as well in terms of success stories that come out of that part of the draft at that position. So there's a lot of pressure in terms of these teams that are trying to figure out their quarterback situation. But for my money, I think that Josh Allen, as we're sitting here 2 months out, I think he's the odds-on choice going into the combine, and based on what we know right now. Now, is Sam Darnold going to blow everyone away with his intangibles and those things? He might. But, you know, he has some flaws as well. I mean, he had a ton of turnovers this year. Offensive line wasn't that great at USC, so he was under duress. And, you know, if he thinks that was duress, then wait till he gets to the NFL, where the number one objective for these defenses is to harass the quarterback.
How would you rate these quarterbacks right now going into the combine and the pro days and the pre-interview process that's going to unfold? Clearly, it sounds like you've Josh Allen 1, Darnold 2, Rosen 3, Mayfield 4, or am I misinterpreting something?
Yeah, I think I would going into the combine, and again, I haven't studied Rosen and Darnold as much as I've seen the senior quarterbacks, yeah. But I think, you know, 2 months from the draft, going into the combine, I would have it Allen, Darnold, Mayfield, and then Rosen, with the caveat that as a Mayfield advocate, I would make sure, as the GM of a given team, that, look, our coaches really want and like this player and feel like they can work with him. Because if there's a shrug of the shoulders or the quarterback coach rolls his eyes and say, I really don't want to work with a six-footer, or, hey, you know, he hit 70%, but a lot of them were smoke screens and shallow crosses. You know, I don't see the translation. If there is a shred of doubt mm-hmm. within your offensive staff, then to me, yeah, you've got to move on from Baker Mayfield. But there's got to be an all-in belief that he can be a bona fide player in the NFL. And then with Josh Rosen, you know, he's the purest passer of all of them, honestly. But I do think that there are some questions that have to be answered here at this combine next week in terms of some of the maturity, some of his you know, beliefs, philosophy. You know, how does he see himself as a leader and those sorts of things? Because the ability to connect to older players that are relying on you as the quarterback to make a living, that's extremely important. And it's probably an attribute that we don't talk about enough when we discuss these quarterbacks, is just the inherent leadership and their style of leadership in dealing not only with their counterparts that are of a similar age, but what about the veteran player that's 28, 29, 32, 33 years old that's looking at a 22-year-old quarterback saying, hey, kid, we're depending on you.
You know, you bring up leadership. That you know what that is, Phil? That's maturity. That's maturity.
Well, it's maturity. It's work ethic. It's leading by example. It's understanding that you're dealing with a lot of different personalities, you know, in an 11-man huddle with different backgrounds, different stories. And, you know, are you a guy that the team is going to rally around? And can you elevate the play of others? I mean, to me, you know, that's one of the things that the greatest quarterbacks in the NFL have always been able to do, and that's elevate the people around them. And obviously, no one has done that better in this generation than Tom Brady and Peyton Manning right before him.
What would you say to the fact that I've had a few personnel people over the last few weeks tell me that Saquon Barkley is unquestionably the best player in this draft, better than the quarterbacks? Is that an assessment you would agree with, Phil, or not agree with?
I would say that if you had to go out and play a game tomorrow, then there's no question that if the game was on the line, you'd much rather just turn and hand the football to Saquon Barkley than rely on one of these quarterbacks to drop back and make that third and seven type of throw. I think that there's more certainty with Saquon Barkley in terms of his projection into the NFL than any of these quarterbacks. However, there's a school of thought out there that you can find a running back. It's been proven as recently as this past year with Alvin Kamara and of course, Kareem Hunt having tremendous success as, you know, non-first-round picks. So I think the viewpoint of GMs and coaches has changed quite a bit in recent years because, you know, you wouldn't take a running back typically in the top of the first round because you felt like, okay, we've got 4 or 5 years to get all of this together, and we need to build our team at other positions, and we'll figure out a running back as we go through the draft. Nowadays, because of the instant impact that an Ezekiel Elliott or a Leonard Fournette can make, I think there is an attraction to Saquon Barkley going very high in this draft because, look, everyone's in a win-now mentality, that kind of thinking that, you know, you don't have 4 or 5 years to figure it out. You've really got a season to a season and a half to show some progress. And, look, it's much easier to just turn and hand the football to a tailback then put all the pieces together and lean on a young quarterback to go out there and win games right out of the gate. So I think that that's one reason why there's an attraction there, and I think that's probably the main reason why we will see Barkley go in the top 4 picks of this draft.
The thing you hear about him, I guess you heard it about Ezekiel Elliott and Fournette, is that he's a generational talent, a generational talent. I mean, people saying that he's the best running back prospect since Adrian Peterson, or maybe the best running back prospect in the last 30 years, which those are some lofty statements to make, but those are the kinds of things that you have heard about Saquon Barkley, which puts him, I think, at a different level. And even though you can find running backs late, it's hard to find running backs like that if he is what people say he is, Phil.
Yeah, I mean, he's a plug-in and play talent. Day one, he's going to dot the I formation for the team that takes him. You know, he's really fully developed physique-wise. I mean, there's not going to be, you know, a big upside. I mean, this is what he's going to be. But he can run inside. He's got the speed outside, home run-type talent on the perimeter. He can catch the ball. Obviously, his pass protection is something that is always can be improved upon as teams, you know, get into it and work with him. But in terms of a guy that can have an instant impact, clearly, of all the offensive players, he's the one that perhaps, not perhaps, but will most definitely have the biggest impact barring injury this next year in 2018 as a rookie, in my humble estimation.
Now, we mentioned that you are the color analyst for the Alabama Crimson Tide Radio Network, and I've come to you before to ascertain some Alabama insight, and I remember you telling me, in particular, what a special young man Jonathan Allen was. The maturity, leadership, talent was unmatched. Give me a breakdown of the top Alabama prospects in this draft, a thumbnail overview sketch of these guys from your scouting personnel eyes.
Yeah, Adam, there are probably 5 Bama players that have a chance to at least certainly be considered in the first round. So let's start with the ones that most people know about. Minka Fitzpatrick, cornerback out of the state of New Jersey. The first time I saw him exposure-wise, they posted a video of him in high school doing defensive back drills on top of a building in New Jersey in the snow. And I'm like, whoa, this kid, I mean, wow. He won't be doing defensive back drills in the snow in Tuscaloosa, but this kid looks like a real player. And Landon Collins, Adam, I've done the radio for Bama for 9 seasons, and Landon Collins was my favorite Alabama player during that time until Minka Fitzpatrick showed up, because
wow. He
really is extremely versatile. He's got size, he's got speed, athleticism, ball skills, instincts. He's a leader, well-spoken, A-plus on and off the field. I mean, to me, he's one of those can't-miss type of prospects, unless, unfortunately, he had some kind of
you know, unusual injury. So he's going to clearly go in the top five, if not top 10 of this draft. Next up is Calvin Ridley, the receiver. In a draft that is not particularly strong at wide receiver, I think he's probably the best of the group. He's silky smooth. He's fast. He can go underneath the defense or on top of it. Of course, he made a lot of big plays for Alabama through the years. But me personally, and I mean this is from an NFL standpoint, not the Bama color guy,
yep.
I don't see him in the class of Julio Jones. I don't necessarily see him as being quite as gifted as Amari Cooper, who both went in the top six of the draft.
Okay.
But in this particular year, he could still go top 10. I think it's more reasonable to think he probably goes somewhere 10 to 20 or the second half of the first round. But he's also a player that will go in and immediately play because he's very mature for a junior. Now, he's a little bit older. He's not your 20-year-old junior. He's like 22 years old. So you're really getting an older-aged underclassman for people that don't know the backstory there. Deron Payne, defensive lineman, the House of Payne, we called him on our broadcast. I mean, this is a big man athlete. I don't know if you saw the Clemson-Bama playoff game, yep. But he made an interception, had a run back. Then they put him in on offense, and he caught a little pass out in the flat. But it wasn't the fact that he just caught it, but he reached out with his hands and also did a little two-step toe tap on the sideline to keep both feet in bounds. I mean, he is really an interesting prospect, and he's not just a stuck-in-the-mud nose tackle. I mean, this is an athletic big man across the front, can play nose or defensive tackle. I think he'll get some buzz generated about him once we get to the combine and people, get more exposure on him. Hmm. You know, next up was Rashawn Evans, linebacker. Ironically enough, he's from Auburn, Alabama, went to Alabama. Played for the Tide. Now, he had a couple little ticky-tack injuries that took away some of his early season hype, but, he came on throughout the season extremely versatile. He can play outside backer or inside backer. He can walk out and cover in space. He can blitz effectively. He's somewhat reminiscent of C.J. Mosley, who went to the Ravens at 16 a few years ago. If Rashawn Tess as good as I think he will at the combine, he could go in that same range. If not, he's probably a second half of the first round type of pick. But for those teams that need linebackers, the Titans, the Eagles, those teams that are going to be picking in the 20s, in the Eagles' case at 32, I mean, if he were there at 32, that would be the steal. Ultimate gift of the first round.
Yeah.
And then the last one I'll mention to you is Ronnie Harrison. He's the safety and the counterpart to Minka Fitzpatrick. Didn't get nearly as much attention because Minka got most of the media coverage. But Ronnie Harrison is a really good player, was one of the top safeties in the country coming out of Tallahassee, Florida, played special teams, then got in the lineup. He can tackle and support the run. He can cover. He's got range in the back end. And I think that, with him, there is a even more upside because he is coming out as a junior. And I think his best football is still ahead of him, and he played quite well for Alabama. So those are five guys right off the top of my head that potentially could go in the first round. And Nick Saban has always said that, look, one of the big differences between college and pro football is that in the NFL, I get one choice every 32 times in a given year. In college football, if we're evaluating and recruiting in the right way, we got a chance to get 4 to 6 first rounders a year. And, they've
and
almost
done that
yeah, during his
exactly.
decade. In Tuscaloosa.
Hey, I'm just curious. How does Ronnie Harrison and Minka Fitzpatrick compare to Marshawn Lattimore and Garyon Conley from last year? Which tandem do you like better from the defensive secondary?
Well, of course, the Ohio State guys were both corners, and that's what their position was and is going to be. And, of course, Lattimore had a tremendous year for the Saints. He was a turnaround-type talent for that team this past season. The Alabama players, Harrison's strictly a safety, but he does have down-in-the-box cover ability. And with so much nickel-and-dime defense now, he's very versatile. So, there's some variety. There's a little bit more variety, I would say, with Minka and Ronnie Harrison, because obviously Minka played corner for 2 years, then moved to safety this year. He's played in the nickel as a slot corner. He's blitzed off the edge.
So there's more variety, more versatility with the Alabama duo as compared to the two corners from Ohio State. But you're talking, I mean, these are all top-shelf high school recruits that ultimately came into college and showed their ability at two major programs, Ohio State and Alabama. So, I mean, you're kind of splitting hairs. It just kind of depends on what flavor of ice cream you like. But obviously I know Minka and Ronnie Harrison better than I do the Ohio State players because I saw every one of their games over the years. And, I mean, there's a reason why Bama won a fifth national title in the last 9 years with those two in the back end of your secondary. Most schools are lucky to have one of those kind of players. Bama had two, plus Levi Wallace is a corner that will likely be drafted on one side, and Anthony Averett from Alabama is the opposite corner, and he's probably going to be a second to fourth round pick himself. So their whole secondary will be part of the draft by the time we get to the end of April.
Phil, my last question for you, having, again, worked all these Alabama and SEC games, having gone to the Reese's Senior Bowl, if you were the GM of the Browns, as you once were, and there were one guy in this first round that you just would love to have, one guy, it's a tough question, who's the one guy that Phil Savage, NFL GM, would love to draft?
I would say, you know, beyond just the Browns, but, you know, Minka Fitzpatrick would be right at the top of my list. Roquan Smith, the linebacker from Georgia, you know, he's an underclassman, so I didn't really pay a lot of attention to him throughout the season. But then when Bama ended up playing Georgia in the national title game, I ended up watching, you know, four, five, six games on Georgia. And, I mean, my first reaction was, wow, this is another Ray Lewis.
Wow.
I mean, he's got an instinctive nature about his game. He's got that six-inch punch in terms of being able to get off of a blocker and then go make a tackle. He's got sideline-to-sideline range. And you could see how the whole Georgia defense really fed off his energy. So those are two that, you know, just jump right to the to my mind's eye as far as players that I watched this year. And, you know, I mentioned Christian Kirk earlier over on the offensive side of things. You know, he's just a tremendous talent as a return man, slot receiver, those sorts of things. And, you know, the beautiful part about the draft is that, you know, we focus so much on the first round, but there are players to be found throughout. And, you know, we had a corner from Florida in our game, Duke Dawson. Now, he had strep throat on Tuesday, but then was able to practice on Wednesday and Thursday. And I thought he's one of those nickel corner type guys that, you know, won't be going in probably the first or second round, but he's going to be a real nice value pick for somebody in the third, fourth round area. But I like Duke Dawson as a football player and as a slot corner. But, you know, those are guys just off the cuff, winging it here on your podcast, Adam.
Well, Phil, if you were John Dorsey, you could take Minka Fitzpatrick at one, come back and take Roquan Smith at four, open the second round with Christian Kirk, and then come back and take Duke Dawson in round three and be a very happy GM.
Yeah, you'd be real happy, especially if you were able to secure the services of one of these veteran quarterbacks. But, you know, I don't know, Adam. I mean, you're following this much closer than I am. But this whole Kirk Cousins sweepstakes, I mean, this thing is going to go so many different directions, I think, over the next couple weeks. And, you know, are the Browns going to be part of that mix?
I don't think so.
Probably. I think they'll be part of it in terms of driving the market. Hmm. But at the end of the day, I think that A.J. McCarron is likely a player that they will keep real strong tabs on for free agency because of that connection with Hugh Jackson and Ken Zampezi, who's now there. And it's an olive branch, so to speak, from Dorsey to Jackson with the understanding that if they take a quarterback at one or four, now he gets to pick the guy he wants. And now they have a bridge, and there's some sequential sense to all of it in terms of having a bridge quarterback and a drafted quarterback. That's been one of the real challenges for Cleveland through these last, really almost the last two decades, is there's never been the sequencing of, okay, we've got a veteran, we're going to bridge the draft pick. And when it was in place, it didn't work out. So I think that they have a chance to sort of get things in alignment with a veteran or a bridge quarterback to a draft pick, and they get a chance to take the first one overall if that's the decision they, they decide to make.
And if they go get A.J. McCarron, as you're saying is possible, then they could be as patient as they want on a guy like Josh Allen, which marries up to what you were saying earlier in this podcast. It does make a lot of sense. It's going to be fascinating to watch. Phil, as always, I always appreciate you taking some time. We do miss you in Bristol. I will see you in Indianapolis, and I look forward to that as well. And thank you very much again.
I appreciate it, Adam. And, you know, in advance of the combine and just talking about recruiting and scouting, you know, I did write a book this past year called Fourth and Goal Every Day. It primarily centers around Alabama, but there are a lot of scouting nuggets in there through my, you know, 25-plus years of looking at players and, you know, just being exposed to some great coaches, great scouts, some tremendous players through the years. And I think your listeners would enjoy it, whether they're an Alabama fan, if they're a football fan, they'll really like that book. And it went out last August. I'm very proud of it, and I think people would get a lot out of it if they take the time to go read it.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Phil, and I guarantee you, knowing everything I do about you and all the insight you have, it would be fantastic. Thank you.
Appreciate it, Adam. Always enjoy the time. I look forward to seeing you in Indianapolis.
Thank you, Phil.
Ask Adam.
Ask Adam.
Ask Adam.
Ask Adam.
Ask Adam. We should ask Adam.
Plenty of good voicemails today, Adam. Our interviews ran a little long, so it'll be an abbreviated Ask Adam section, but let's get to the voicemails. What do you say?
Thanks, Josh.
Hey, Adam. This is Bryce Sneed from Raleigh, North Carolina. The emphasis has been protect Cam and give him as many weapons as possible. With that in mind, what is a cap-friendly deal you could see us getting done with star free agent Andrew Norwell?
Well, listen, it sounds like right now that they are inclined to use the franchise tag on Graham Gano, which gets Norwell to the market. And if Norwell hits the market, it's going to be very tough to keep him because there are so many teams out there with offensive line needs, a la the New York Giants, with your former GM, Dave Gettleman, now serving as the GM there, that I think it's going to be tough to keep Andrew Norwell in Carolina. He's the top interior offensive lineman out there. And again, I don't mean to disappoint you, Bryce, but I think that he's going to be moving on, but that's what the next few weeks are for.
Let's stay in the NFC South for this question.
Hi, this is Jonathan from Tampa. With the Bucs in dire need of a defensive lineman, especially pass rusher, and with the news coming out that Ziggy Ansah probably won't be getting out of Detroit, is there any defensive end, defensive tackle slash pass rusher that will be available come free agency?
Well, Jonathan, it's a very difficult thing to find. Look, DeMarcus Lawrence is going to be tagged in Dallas. The Lions don't want to lose Ziggy Ansah. Julius Peppers is a free agent. Adrian Claiborne's a free agent. But you're not going to find the top flight pass rusher out there. And the Bucs are drafting 7th, I believe, in the first round of the draft. Look, they could use some upgrades on the offensive line. They could use some defensive line help. It's one of the problems. Really, they have always struggled to come up with that pass rusher. I go back to when they drafted the late Gaines Adams, who was supposed to be a tremendous player coming out of Clemson and just obviously never got the hang of it and then tragically lost his life. They do need another pass rusher. They're short at that position. It's a tough spot for Jason Light in the front office to be in. I would imagine that they'll be mining the bottom of the free agent barrel there and hoping that they find a steal there to go along with Noah Spence that can apply some pressure. But, Jonathan, it's not going to be an easy task. The Buccaneers have a lot of work to do in that area.
From a question about pass rushers to a question about quarterbacks, we go to this voicemail.
This is James. Do you see the Arizona Cardinals drafting a quarterback in the NFL draft this year, or do you see them signing a marquee free agent quarterback?
Yeah, well, how about both, James? Listen, there are really two marquee quarterback free agents right now. We've got Kirk Cousins, and we've got Case Keenum. And I think that the teams in play for Cousins are the Jets, the Vikings, and the Broncos. And if Cousins doesn't go to Minnesota, then I think Keenum goes back there. But if Cousins does go to Minnesota, then that leaves Keenum to leave. And I just don't see Arizona figuring in right now with either of them. Maybe Keenum. Maybe Keenum. I don't see Arizona in on Cousins. I could see Arizona going for a player like Sam Bradford, coming up with an incentive-laden contract, and then drafting a guy. No matter what they do in free agency, and I don't think they get Kirk Cousins, I think they draft a quarterback that they begin to develop. And so now you're in a situation where who's going to be their guy? Maybe they're the team that knocks on the door for Tyrod Taylor in Buffalo. Look, they're going to have to get some type of veteran out there, and I think they're going to be drafting somebody no matter what. But they're also in the middle of the round. They won some games at the end of the year, which set them back there. So it's going to be tough to get one of these top-rated guys. Again, just like the Bucks are going to have a hard time finding a pass rusher, the Cardinals are in a challenging spot in terms of finding a quarterback, James.
Free agency and the draft still several weeks away. That means there's plenty of time to get those questions in to Ask Adam. Just make sure you call, leave your name, and leave a good voicemail for us. See if it makes the show. 860-506-5779.
And so that's a wrap on this week's Adam Schefter podcast. A very special thanks to the Patriots free agent running back Deion Lewis. We wish him the best in the coming weeks. And to the executive director of the Reese's Senior Bowl, a wealth of knowledge, Phil Savage. And thank you to you, the listeners, for listening to this podcast and for your voicemail questions. Please keep them coming in the future. And please tune in next week when we'll be back with another Adam Schefter podcast.